Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and also get more information about the podcast as well as other content at our website, dsmsports.net. Happy springtime, everyone around the country, all the listeners. Thanks for listening. Hope you're enjoying some warmer weather now after the long winter. And the beginning of spring means that Major League Baseball is right around the corner after the winter time and the offseason. And we are really excited to have on the show today the director of content for the San Diego Padres, Jesse Agler. The Padres are not just my favorite team, but they're also a team that made a lot of buzz in the offseason with trades and moves and some great execution on social media and content. And we're going to talk to Jesse a little about the strategy behind all that content and how it's really led to some success off the field for the Padres as well. But before we get to our conversation with Jesse today, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is a smartphone app that's really popular these days with social media folks, and it is an app that allows you to create some really great effects and touch-ups and little things, enhancements for photos and videos, and it's an app called Enlight. Now, it's a $3.99 one-time cost, but well worth the cost because it has every effect under the sun you could possibly want for photos and videos, allows you to really do a professional-looking job with little or no skills. There's also a lot of preset settings you can choose to make your photo or video look good. It's really kind of like a PicMonkey, but on steroids, or a Canva that's even better, except it's a mobile app, and it's well worth that $3.99 cost. You can get your content ready for any social network or your website, and really do a good job of touching up and enhancing those photos and videos. So check it out. Play around with it. Again, $3.99 one-time cost. You can read up on the internet about it as well and some reviews if you want to get a little insight before you drop those $4. But check it out. That's the episode's helpful tool. Think you'll like it. It'll make you look good as a photo and video producer. And it's called Enlight. E-N-Light. All right. That's the episode's helpful tool. We'll be right back to have a really good discussion with Jesse Agler, Director of Content for the San Diego Padres. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's a premium app called Enlight, and I'm sure our guest today knows plenty about photos because they are sharing tons of photos every day along with other great content. We are delighted to have on the podcast Jesse Agler, Director of Content for my favorite team in pro sports, the San Diego Padres. Welcome to the podcast, Jesse.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, and looking forward to chatting.
We are very excited to have you on the podcast, as I am personally as well, being a huge Padres fan, and I'm ready to dig in and have a good conversation about all things Padres and digital and social media. But before we get into the substance of our discussion, we want to definitely get to know you. Have our guests, we always have our guests introduce themselves, talk about how they came up with the business, and how you got to that dream job we have today.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's been a little bit of a different path probably than a lot of people that are, you know, in the digital world. You know, I came up in the kind of broadcast universe, came up through radio professionally. You know, my goal has always been and continues to be a broadcaster, and I do broadcasting for the Padres, which is great. But, you know, somewhere along the lines, I kind of picked up this skill set a little bit, and, you know, I was given an opportunity to do some things in the digital space. When I was working in Miami for the Dolphins. And so I've sort of, you know, kind of continued to spin that forward, continue to learn, try to continue to grow, and try out some different things. So it's been cool. You know, I went to college thinking broadcasting. I did a lot of student radio at the University of Miami. I did baseball broadcasting right out of college. I then went to work at a radio station in Miami. I did the radio station thing for about 7 years before the Dolphins job. And about a year into my job with the Dolphins, I was handed off some Twitter responsibilities, and that's where the whole digital thing kind of took off. I spent 4 seasons with the Dolphins, radio broadcasting, TV broadcasting, hosting, and now here in San Diego. This will be my second season coming up.
That's awesome. And I guess backing up a little bit to your days in Miami, and even right after, I mean, what was the process like of trying to get that first job, that first broadcasting job out of college? I mean, did you have connections already? Did you send out demo tapes or whatever the thing was at the time? I mean, what was that like?
Yeah, no, it was CDs at the time. Thank you very much. But yeah, it was all of that. And my first job right out of college, it was like the Jayhawk League, which is one of those collegiate wood bat summer leagues. And it was in Kansas. and a little small town in the bottom left-hand corner of Kansas. Elkhart was the name. And I think I got the call for the phone interview and the job hiring like 2 days before graduation, something crazy like that. So pretty much right after graduation, I got in the car, drove to Kansas, and that's where I spent that summer. And then I came back to South Florida after that baseball season. And using the connections I'd made in school, I was able to get sort of, like an update anchor kind of position at the big local sports radio station. And that's how it all got started.
That's awesome. And we'll have to have a whole nother episode sometime. You can just tell some stories about days in Kansas.
Yeah. There's a lot of stories. That's for sure.
So obviously being while you were with the Dolphins and even before that, it seems like you were definitely adding to your skill set a little bit. And like you said, becoming just as much into digital media as you were broadcast media. So how did that sort of shape your career path? And when did you sort of decide, okay, this is what I need to be doing, is not just sitting in front of a camera or sitting behind a microphone. And there's more to it, the more skills I can bring to the table.
I think that's something I always knew, in the back of my head, even before Twitter existed and all that. I kind of knew that the more you can do, the more valuable you are. I don't think I ever saw myself as a one-trick pony. And even, when I was young and I was applying for minor league broadcasting jobs, 90-whatever% of them said, hey, you're also going to sell. You're also going to be on the grounds crew. You're also going to dress up as the mascot. You're also going to do the game notes. You're also going to be the official scorer, or some combination of all of those things. So that was kind of like in my head going back a long, long way that, look, I'm not, Vin Scully here. They're not just going to give me a microphone and say, that's it. So I think particularly as a young person in the industry, I kind of understood that the more I could do, the more valuable I was, and the more appealing I would be as a prospective employee, whether it was at a team or a radio station or whatever else. So, when the social media responsibilities were kind of handed to me in Miami, it was like that was already in my head that, okay, this is good, and I'm going to be able to be more valuable to this organization. So while I never really, expected it to be something like that, I was ready for it. And, it was a lot of blogging responsibility there as well. I had sort of picked that up on my own. At one point, a couple of years prior to that, I was laid off from the radio station I was working at, and they rehired me like at the end of the summer. They laid me off right before the summer. They rehired me at the end of the summer. But that summer I was like, what am I going to do? And I just sort of started my own little blog, South Florida sports stuff, trying to just stay sharp and be active. And that was kind of right at the beginning of Twitter. So I would use Twitter to, push blog posts out. And it was all, random stuff. It was like a blog spot, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But again, even at that time, I was like, this is important. I need to know how to do all of this stuff. And I always enjoyed writing too. So, it all just sort of tied together, with the Dolphins. And the cool thing was, and it's, I guess, the old cliche about preparation and opportunity, but, when those opportunities came to me at the Dolphins, I was fully prepared for it. And I was totally comfortable with, okay, I can do blogging. I can do Twitter. I can learn, social media strategy on a broader level than I ever knew existed, but I was ready to kind of take that stuff on.
That's awesome. That's such an inspiring story too. I mean, to think that you, and it's easier even nowadays, is that you got out there, you started publishing content yourself. You put made it so that when it came time to look for a job and have a job out there, that you put your money where your mouth is. And it really makes sense to be in that broadcasting mold and be able to represent the team on social media as well, to be able to show that you have all those versatile skills to really be a voice for the team. And it seems like you were able to do that in Miami as well as San Diego now. But with the Dolphins, it definitely seems like they delved into social media more from the PR side at first, given that you were blogging for them a little bit. We see other clubs and other sports that maybe it originates in marketing more. And everyone sort of has their different social media roots. Now I'd say it probably spans the departments, of course. But how was your role there with the Dolphins, and how was it looked at from a marketing and branding perspective as well as PR? And has that changed, or did that change over time?
I can't speak to where the Dolphins are now, but I can tell you at the time it was like very kind of Wild West. We were just trying to figure it out. We said, okay, here, this can be useful, and it is a marketing tool, it is a PR tool, it's a content tool, and, I think my job at the time, my job title was like content manager, so I didn't strictly fall under marketing or PR. I didn't work for the PR office, I didn't work for the marketing office. We sort of had our own content department, And so, you know, we kind of learned our lessons and we took our bumps and our bruises, and we sort of, I think, as a group, figured out kinds of things that worked, the kinds of things that didn't, you know, what was more realistic, what was more aspirational. And the cool thing about that was that, you know, really three full football seasons and off seasons of doing all of that, I was able to then, you know, come to San Diego and start at a totally different level. And it wasn't just me. I mean, the buy-in goes several levels above me in the organization. And it was cool because, you know, when we got to San Diego, we said, all right, here are the lessons we've learned in Miami. You know, we can kind of go full speed ahead right out of the gate. And that was one of the really fun things about coming here.
So was that kind of part of it? Is when you came to San Diego, did you take a lot of the philosophy that you'd built up in Miami? And I know, of course, we keep on saying we, because I know that that Wayne Portello, who's now with you in San Diego, was with you in Miami as well, right? And you guys sort of made the move together.
Yeah. So Wayne came out, I don't remember the months, but he came out during the 2014 football season, 13, whatever the last year I was there, a couple years ago. He came out during that season. I, you know, kind of heard from him after the football season. It was like, hey, you know, what do you think of San Diego? So he had kind of gotten out here and laid some of the groundwork. And, you know, I think the really important thing, and I give a ton of credit to the team president, Mike D, who is also in Miami, now San Diego, and ownership with the Padres, was the buy-in went all the way to the top. And that makes this so much easier. You know, I think we all kind of have a sense, right, what works socially, what works from a digital media standpoint. But if ownership, or at least like the team president or the CMO or whatever, if you're not getting the buy-in at a very high level in the organization, it can make it really, really difficult to execute. So that's maybe the best part about this whole situation right now, is that the buy-in goes all the way through ownership. And everybody's sort of on board with what we're trying to do, and they recognize the value in it.
And how is that? I mean, we'll get more into the details in a sec, but how is that really accomplished, Jesse? I mean, I know even right before we started our chat today, we talked a little about how the C-suite, the owners, tend to be older, tend to not know as much on when it comes to digital media and keeping things close to the vest. How is that accomplished in Miami, and how are you guys getting it done in San Diego with great success?
I think it's up the ladder, and this is just going to sound like I'm kissing up to my bosses, but it's true. Like, I didn't convince ownership that this was something to do. You know, Wayne is the CMO, and when you bring in a younger guy who gets all of this to be at that C level, I think people are going to pay attention to what he has to say. And Mike above him believes in it. You know, I mean, we kind of showed Mike in Miami what we were capable of doing, you know, in the digital space, and he believes. So that's it. And then, you know, Mike and Wayne, whatever combination, you know, when they talk to ownership about it, you know, for those guys to be open-minded, you know, it's not really their universe. But for them to understand, appreciate, recognize, whatever, that it's something that can work, you know, that's the game changer.
Oh, that's great. And there's a lot of social media, and sports marketers out there who are just jealous of your situation.
But 100%, 100%. And look, for all the success we have and, you know, some of the good things we do, first of all, I'm not going to act like we're the greatest in the world at it, but I think we do a nice job. But it is made so much easier because of that. I mean, I know, you know, talking to other people who do stuff, you know, stuff like this professionally, you know, there can be some really serious challenges up the ladder. And I know how lucky we are here.
That's great. And you know, Wayne and Mr. D, they both do a great job on social themselves, and they really practice what they preach, and it's definitely an all-out buy-in. It's great.
Yeah, that's a big part of the strategy. It really is. You know, it's not that it's just going to be this at Padres Twitter account, you know, that kind of runs the world. It's that, you know, you have different voices, different faces within the organization that are accessible to the fans. It's really important.
It truly is a social organization. That's awesome. How about, I guess, sort of staying in a similar realm, getting buy-in from team operations too, and whether it was, you know, Jed Hoyer before, AJ Preller now, the general manager, and the team operations guys, a lot of them are really worried about, we want to keep things close to the vest, don't let any rumors flow out there, especially this past off season where there was a lot going on, of course, for the Padres with signings and trades and whatnot. What's the buy-in like for them when it comes to really representing the organization on social and digital media and being a place that fans can come to, not just for, you know, photos and official news, but even anything they want to know about the Padres at any given time?
Yeah, well, that's the strategy is that we are sort of this central hub for Padres news and information, you know, and that we're not just a press release dumpster, you know, where you can come and sort through old releases. You know, that's a key part of our entire digital strategy. You know, as far as getting the buy-in from baseball operations, look, that's another thing, you know, like getting the buy-in from ownership, and it's a lot easier in some places than it is in others. You know, I think AJ Preller, and that's really, you know, the guy we're working with closely now, obviously, he's just not concerned about it. Like, he's going to do his job. He knows we're going to do our jobs. We're not going to do anything that gets in the way of his job. And I think the reality of the landscape is, and I wish more people realized this, is that if something's out there, it's out there, right? So like if John Heyman of CBS or Ken Rosenthal of Fox has a report out there, it's out there. Everybody knows about it. Everybody sees it. Now, if we blog about that, it's not like now all of a sudden people are going to see it. They already knew about it. We're, again, just trying to be sort of a one-stop shop for Padres information. And I think
without lending extra credence to it, though, by distributing it?
I think that's where you sort of have to build a content platform, and you sort of have to trust your audience to be savvy enough to understand it. And you have to write it in a way that makes it clear, hey, this is a report of Ken Rosenthal's. You know, and I mean, that's what blogging is at the end of the day, right? You're essentially, a lot of the time, just aggregating, you know, a story from somebody else. And that's just the reality of the sports media landscape, and maybe even the media landscape in a lot of ways. And is there somebody reading that that's like, hey, it's official, this trade was made because there's a blog on the Padres website? Maybe. Right. But I think most people are savvy enough consumers of information, particularly the people that are going to be clicking around on Twitter and through your blog and on your website. You know, they get it, but you have to be clear about it. And, I've never run into a situation where some fan is angry because they thought it was official. And, you know, I think people understand it. And, again, it goes back to sort of the way you write it. Now, some organizations, they're not going to buy into that. They want to stay completely silent. And, you know, they think that there's all these secrets. And I'm not saying that AJ Preller doesn't have secrets, but if he has secrets and Ken Rosenthal is writing about it, that's not a secret. That's something that's out there in the universe. And so I think that's an important, you know, distinction to draw. And AJ gets that. You know, he understands that. And I think that's it. I think it's such a simple thing, and it's sometimes crazy to me how complicated that can be made in places.
So, for example, this past offseason, among all the moves the Padres made, they were also rumored a lot with a local San Diegan, Cole Hamels, who's now still with Philadelphia. Did you guys publish any blogs that were mentioning those rumors? And if so, do you have any – there's no concern at all that an AJ Pro will come and say, hey, you know, don't stop throwing gas on that fire. You're killing us.
No, because here's the distinction we draw, and this is actually a really good thing to bring up. Is we're not going to do a blog about a rumor. We'll do a blog or that kind of a speculative rumor. We'll do a blog if Ken Rosenthal says, hey, the Padres are trading for somebody, or the Padres and James Shields, I think the free agent one's probably a better example. Hey, the Padres and James Shields have agreed to terms. Now, it might be 3 days before he passes the physical and before, you know, the paper is signed and all that kind of stuff. So we'll report, you know, or we'll blog a report like that. But yeah, no, when it comes to sort of speculative, we stay out of the way of that. And I think that's kind of the distinction we've drawn.
Very important. And how about and just lastly on this subject, and then we'll move on for sure, is the bar you guys set is, I mean, we talk about some of the big names, of course, the John Heymans, the Ken Rosenthals, you know, ESPN, Jason Stark, Jerry Krasnick, and all those folks, Tim Kirkjian. Is there a bar you guys kind of set for, okay, this is a reputable enough name that we can also, you know, report it as well, whether it's Corey Brock or Barry Bloom or Bleacher Report? I mean, where is that bar for the Padres?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think we have a distinct line in the sand. It's probably a case-by-case thing. But, you know, I think generally if it's – even if it's a writer, that might not be that big of a deal. If he's representing a website that's a reputable place, you know, I'm good with it personally, but it is case by case. You know, I mean, if it's an SB Nation guy, that's good enough for me. It is, you know, I mean, if he's reporting it and he's got a track record, you know, I think that's important too. So, you know, you kind of look at different guys and what their track records are. If it's just some random dude on the internet, you know, like an Incarcerated Bob type guy, that's going to be a little bit of a different situation. But if it's somebody that, you know, is representing a larger entity, and there's some editorial oversight there, then, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with it. But I wouldn't paint with broad strokes here. I'd say it's case by case.
So if you have an egg picture for your Twitter handle, probably not the most reputable source.
Correct. Yeah, you gotta at least have a logo, like a team logo or something. Yeah.
Let's talk a little about how you guys show value by being that one stop shop for fans, and making sure that fans continue to come back to you. How does the club ultimately set the goals and objectives for digital and social media content, and how does it really fit in with the bottom line and the greater business objectives of the organization?
I mean, look, the business objective, as far as I'm concerned, is engagement, and that's the goal. It's getting people to be engaged with the Padres or the Dolphins or whatever team. And I mean, all the research shows the more engaged your fan base is, the more likely they are to buy a ticket or a t-shirt or a hat or whatever. So it's not like a literal dollars and cents and, well, we're putting X into it and we expect to get Y out of it. It's sort of a broader, softer, this is good for business kind of approach. You know, as for how you get fans to be into it and get fans to want to come to you for information, I think you have to earn that. You have to earn it. And you have to get them to trust you that your information isn't BS. You got to get them to recognize that, hey, you're just passing along news. You're trying to make it easy for them. That's all this is. You know, we're trying to make it as easy for a Padre fan to have access and information regarding the Padres as possible. That's kind of it at the end of the day.
So when was it similar with Miami and San Diego as well? Have you cultivated a distinct personality and brand at each club, or is it just really being that helpful entity for the fans?
I think the strategy is the same, and I mean, to me, the strategy in its most basic sense is if you're providing, you know, good legit content, everything else falls into place. But yeah, no, the personality and the tone is going to be different everywhere. And the Padres' personality and tone on, you know, this March whatever is very different than the Padres' personality and tone last March whatever. You know, that's part of it too. And I mean, we had some serious ups and downs with the Dolphins in those four seasons. And you have to be aware of that. You got to be cognizant of that. You can't just always have the same tone. You can't just always have the same voice. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're starting the season 8-1 and everybody's excited, you can take more risks. You can have more fun. You can have a different tone than if the team is 0-6 and your fan base is like ready to burn the stadium down.
Oh, of course. Is there a different, not necessarily philosophy, but a different cadence because of the 162 game season versus the 16 game season when you only have 8 home games to worry about ticket sales messaging for, and whereas in San Diego you have 81 plus games to worry about putting out ticket sales for?
Yeah, they're different animals like that. You know, I mean, the strategy is what it is, and, you know, but they are different beasts, you know. Like you said, football, it's 8 games, you know, at home in the regular season. Baseball, it's 81. But I don't differentiate, you know, between coverage or anything when it comes to a home and an away game. Obviously, you know, from a ticket standpoint, like you said, you're only worried about selling your home dates. But this is not just about tickets. This is about supplying good content. And so if that is when the Padres are at home against the Dodgers or when it's the Padres on the road against the Indians, like, you got to have the same effort. I mean, and I think that's what's really important. And the same thing with the Dolphins. And yeah, one of the big differences is just the overall number of games. You know, in football, you just go crazy on Sunday and Monday with your content. You know, it's like you're just all in those 2 days and, you know, you're crushing it. And you do plenty on the other days, but it's like so much energy and attention is focused on Sunday, Monday. In baseball, it's obviously a lot more spread out.
Certainly. And you guys definitely practice what you preach when it comes to prioritizing engagement over, you know, over those direct sales messages, for sure. But when it comes to really creating day-to-day content and looking for what you guys are trying to get out of it, first, I guess, what's the content team like for the Padres and working with Major League Baseball? And second, how is that content really how does it fit into the overall campaigns going on with the team at any given time? Is it tied into certain sales campaigns? Is there an ulterior motive at times with the content you're creating?
I think, you know, just to set it up, it's kind of a pretty small team. I know it's me. We've got sort of a multimedia editor-producer type, Seth Foster, who does a great job. Nikki Patriarca is our content manager. She does a lot of the writing, most of the day-to-day social media. And then Bill Center is a longtime sports writer in town. Mm-hmm. He does some, you know, writing for us as well. We might add like a seasonal blogger type position this year as well, just to kind of help out and help create a little bit more written content. Day-to-day, we sort of, you know, plan everything out. And obviously MLB.com, you know, which is Padres.com, has their own coverage. Corey Brock is the beat writer there, and he does a really outstanding job, but he doesn't work for us. You know, he works for MLB.com, and to a fan, they might say, well, what's the difference? And I get that, but he doesn't. You know, he's not part of our department. We don't give him assignments. You know, he doesn't write for us, but he does cover the team. And luckily for us, he does a really good job covering the team. So that's content that's there that we don't even have to worry about creating. It's just content that essentially magically appears on the website for us to promote. As for your question about ulterior motives, I wouldn't say that, but look, you know, a good example, real life example for right now is this video board, you know, that we're putting in at Petco Park. Mm-hmm. Might have Bill write something about the video board because that's a big thing we're trying to promote. Again, though, I think that's something people are interested in. It's not like we're trying to sell them on something that isn't cool or interesting. It's great. We can say, hey, Bill, let's write a feature on the video board. He can talk to the guy that are running the video board, give you a behind-the-scenes feature about how it works, you know, about how big it is, all the particulars, that kind of thing. So I wouldn't call that an ulterior motive, but yeah, that's something we're able to do, is, you know, assign, you know, somebody to write a story about something that is a bigger deal. Last year, similarly, hey, Bill, you know, let's do a story on all the new food options available at Petco Park. And look, obviously, that's a marketing ticketing message, but it's content marketing at the end of the day. People are interested in that they can get Seaside Market or Hodads or Rymals or whatever it is at Petco Park. And so we're going to give them that information in sort of an easy to digest, pun intended, way to consume.
I'm partial to Taco Tuesdays and Phil's Barbecue myself.
There you go. A lot of good options.
But yeah, I think you definitely hit the nail on the head there, is that the key term, and it's very prevalent in sports in particular, is content marketing, and is that the content is the marketing itself. I mean, I remember, you know, being with clubs working in digital and social media, and having folks ask me, you know, what are we doing to market this upcoming series, this upcoming games? And I said, have you seen, we're covering practice. We have interviews of players talking about how pumped they are to face this team in a playoff race back in front of the home crowd. That's marketing. That's getting people excited about the games, excited about the team, and it seems like that's what the Padres are really going for, and why you talk about prioritizing content and engagement that's going to get fans going.
That's the whole strategy, and I think fans are today smart. They're savvy. You can't just say, buy tickets Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. You know, like, that's just doesn't work. And look, if you're winning World Series, it's a totally different ballgame. You know, we're talking about, for your normal run-of-the-mill team, and obviously we're going into a pretty exciting year with the Padres, so it's not going to be normal run-of-the-mill. But, you know, for most teams, most years, as, you know, we look across the entire sports landscape in this country, you're going to have challenges at times to try and sell tickets. And not that the Padres, I'm sure there'll be some challenges this year. It's just part of the nature of the thing. But, like, yeah, like, people don't want to just be told, buy tickets. You give them more than that, and you can't always be asking. That's another part of it, and that's why we're giving them, you know, content. And, you know, 90-whatever percent of the content that we're producing has no content marketing aspect to it. It's just content. Mm-hmm. And then every once in a while you say, hey, by the way, you know, if you want to buy a ticket, this is what you do. You kind of throw it in, but you're not beating them over the head with that. People don't want that.
And you know, like, at that point too, because they trust you, because you're giving them good content, the ticket messages are almost welcome. It's like, okay, sure. I almost forgot that I could buy a ticket and go see the team now.
That's it. And it's a giving culture. It's not a screaming culture. It's not a taking culture. It's a giving culture. And that goes back to that whole engagement thing. And an engaged fan base is going to be more engaged, from a purchasing standpoint too. So it's, you know, some people look at this and they think it's, you know, sneaky and tricky and all those things. I think it's really not. I think it's very, very pure. We're giving you good information. And the cool thing about working for a team is we can provide access that no outside media source can. We can do stuff in the clubhouse that we're not going to let the newspaper or the local TV station do. We can do stuff when the doors are closed, you know, at Petco Park and show you things that you're not going to be able to see, you know, from anywhere else. So you got to take advantage of having that access.
Oh, I love that. You're putting it in such great terms. I love it. Listeners, just listen to that last couple minutes there again and again. And real quickly before we move forward, talking to Jesse Agler, director of digital, director of content for the San Diego Padres, having a great conversation here. With content, obviously it's something you guys are first and foremost. Are you guys trending to more toward video these days, towards short-term video a la Vine, even Meerkat now?
I wouldn't say we're pushing one thing over the other. I believe personally in a balanced approach. You know, if you think about your own habits, and this is how I always think about it. How do I consume stuff? You know, and now I also want to know how somebody 10 years younger than I am consumes stuff. I also want to know how somebody 10 years older than I am consumes stuff, and so on and so forth. But I always try and think about that. And sometimes I want to read an article. Sometimes I want to watch an 8-second video. Sometimes I want to watch a 90-second video. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's important to sort of have an approach where you do all of the above. You know, I think one of the really ones that I'm very excited about right now is Twitter sort of allowing you to have freeform video within the tweets that's not a Vine. You know, I think that's been really helpful because you can get a little bit more produced there. You can put a little bit more shine on something. And, you know, I love the idea of a 10 to 25 second video, you know, within a tweet, you know, showing something, and it's got a little more polish to it, you know, than maybe a Vine would. But I guess all of the above is my answer to your question.
Are you guys looking at all with bilingual content, especially with all the Spanish-speaking fans the Padres have?
Yeah, no, it's a huge point of emphasis, and we know it's something we got to do better with and more of, and that process is underway, and, you know, hopefully you'll be seeing a lot more Spanish-language content written and multimedia this year, for sure.
Wow, excelente, muy bueno.
Sí.
I guess shifting real quickly with our time left here, before we get into this episode's shareable stat, let's talk real briefly about the incredible offseason that the Padres had. I mean, it seemed like there was a three-day period there where you guys probably didn't sleep, where it was something crazy big happening every day, whether it was Matt Kemp and then Will Myers, and then obviously weeks later James Shields. And how did you guys as a digital team really capitalize on all that attention and make sure that you guys got, I mean, you knew that the traffic was going to come, you knew the buzz was going to happen, but how do you make sure that you maximize the winnings, so to speak, on that winning hand?
You got to be ready for everything and anything. I think that's what it comes down to. And, you know, again, we're reading all the same reports that the fans are, so we knew Matt Kemp was a possibility. So we go to our design crew, who, by the way, are a huge part of the kind of success that we've had. You know, I think we've done a really good job visually, and having really, really talented in-house designers is a major, major component for success. That's my opinion. Guys are just there and can do stuff and are talented. So, you know, hey, Matt Kemp, this could very well happen. Let's build some Matt Kemp graphics. And if you saw it, when that news finally went official, we had a couple of cool Matt Kemp things we were able to push out immediately.
It was beautiful. I noticed that too.
Yeah. So now, of all the things we pushed out, you know, in that, you know, couple day period, there was another drawer full of stuff that never saw the light of day. But it was about being prepared for anything. You know, there's a welcome to San Diego blank, you know, that we delete, put it in the trash. Don't ever, you know, like let it out. You know, we don't want to accidentally see that on the internet someday. So you just have to be ready for anything. And it's a complete team effort. There were days and nights where we were there a very long time. And that's part of the deal. And I think we all know that and we're all committed to it. And, you know, I think as a staff, how could you not be excited? How could you not have fun? You know, we were bringing pizza in at 10 o'clock at night, you know, like waiting for these trades to happen and making sure we were ready to, you know, hit all the social media right when we could and that sort of thing. And then once the move happens and, you know, to really kind of keep the ball rolling. So, okay, now there's a press conference. So you cover the press conference in every way, shape, and form. Everybody knows that. But what else are we doing? Oh, we got three camera guys following Matt Kemp around. And so then the next day we can keep the ball rolling by giving you a behind-the-scenes video of Matt Kemp's first day at Petco Park. So it becomes this multi-day thing. And I think that's always a good way to think about it and always challenge yourself. Like, how can we keep this going one more day? How can we, you know, sort of extend this story and extend this excitement so that it's never just a one-day pop?
Is it really also making sure that you have that content team in place that's willing to create a bunch of content that may never see the light of day? I mean, it's the same thing even with stuff like Snapchat now. I mean, you're creating content that in 24 hours people will maybe just forget about.
Yeah, I mean, let me go back to like a broadcasting analogy here. You know, I mean, when I prepare to broadcast a Padre game on television or radio, for a normal game, I probably use about 40% of the notes that I spent the entire day putting together, but that's part of the deal.
Wow.
And you know what? If that weird thing happens in the eighth inning and I've got it right there in front of me, that's awesome. And if it didn't, well, that's life. And it's kind of the same thing. And you got to be ready for everything, and you just sort of have to understand that it's not going to happen. And yeah, there's a buy in there, but that's just, you know, having a team of people that understands the way the world works. And we definitely have that. We've got a great team.
I love that. That's a great analogy. And also lastly, on this topic, when it comes to really capitalizing all that buzz, is there a nudge even from your CMO, Wayne, or from others who are saying, hey guys, this is all amazing content, great content, but can we stick in some links for merchandise sales to buy a Kemp jersey? Can we stick in a link for season tickets while fans are at their most excited state?
Yeah, I don't think that directive came down. I think it's just something you do. I think it's something you know to do. You know, maybe you have a Matt Kemp slideshow and the fifth slide is like buy your Kemp jersey with a link. To me, that's just, it's kind of standard operating procedure. You know, that's just a standard practice. I don't think it's something that's going to offend the consumer at that point, you know, or the user, the reader or whatever. Like, they're excited. Let's go. Like, those things are going to fly off the shelves, whether we do that or not. Might as well help. Might as well try to push a couple more. I mean, that's, at the end of the day, the point of a business, right? It's to sell things and to get people excited, and it's part of the deal. So yeah, you know, to me, that's kind of a common sense thing. And you know, people are excited. They want to buy tickets. They want to buy a hat. They want to buy the jersey. They want to buy the T-shirt. Cool. Let's make it as easy as we can for them.
Huh, definitely, I like that. And lastly, too, before we do this episode's shareable stat, what's the data tracking and analytics like when it comes to really day-to-day stuff, but also those huge peaks and from those buzzworthy trades and off-season moves? Are you guys tracking not just social media traffic, but website traffic and even direct sales of season tickets during those days?
Yeah, I don't get too much into the ticket part of the nitty-gritty of the data. You know, we have other people that do that.
Mm-hmm.
And my thinking with that is mostly that if we're doing it right, it's going to happen. And you know, so I'm very much in on our web analytics, on our social media analytics. I think that if you're not tracking that stuff in real time, you're not doing it right. That's my own opinion. And that's something I learned in Miami with the Dolphins. I don't think an end of the week report tells you anything. I certainly don't think an end of the month report tells you anything. Mm-hmm. That might be something to bring up in a senior staff meeting and, you know, tell your CEO or your team president or whoever, you know, here's the kind of month we had, or here's the kind of week we had. But when you're doing it and you're in it, you should have that tab open all the time. You know, you should be constantly seeing what's working, what's not, and reacting accordingly.
Oh, especially in sports, and especially a sport like baseball, where you can change what you're doing day to day with another game the next day.
You can, even if there's not another game. I think if you were in the business of anything, that would be my strategy. That would be my philosophy. I think, you know, the internet moves at a real-time pace, and you should be paying attention to what's happening every single moment.
Ah, oh, I love that. And real quick, before this was shareable stat, tell in a couple, just a minute or two, Tell our listeners about the Padres Social Hour. I think it's something really unique you guys brought over from the Dolphins, and it's really, really cool, and it really seems to resonate with the fans.
Yeah, it's all part of the same content strategy. We're going to give you access and information that you weren't getting before on the team. So Padres Social Hour is a one-hour show, and I say show because it's a radio show, a TV show, and an online show. It's on all three platforms. That airs every single day live during the season. And it's a great opportunity for fans to hear directly from players, executives, coaching staff, manager, all of that. And it's interactive, and it's something that we did in Miami. We did it 52 weeks a year in Miami. It's called the Finsiders. And we sort of brought the strategy over. We learned our lessons there, what worked, what didn't, applied those lessons here in San Diego. And as you said, baseball is a little bit different than football. So we only do the live shows every day during the season for Padres Social Hour. But it's great. It's just good access. It's more Padres content that's out there. And it's on Fox Sports San Diego. It's on ESPN Radio. And it's on Padres.com. So really, anywhere in the world, you can have access to this thing one way or the other. And it's been a lot of fun. You know, I host the show. And this will be our second year doing it, and people really seem to enjoy it, which means a lot to us. You know, we We want to be engaged, you know. We want our fans to feel a part of this thing because they are a part of this thing at the end of the day. You know, if you have no fans, you have nothing. You know, that's it. And so we're just trying to, you know, give them another touch point, I guess.
Definitely. And it really is fantastic. It really is a way that you guys take that conversation that you're having every minute on social offline as well and bring it into a studio and a TV show. It's really successful, and I love it.
Thanks.
But we could talk to you all day, Jesse. I know I have so many more questions, not just about social media, but about the Padres in general. But we'll have a little bit of fun with you coming up in our Jump Around with Jesse segment, some quick-hitting questions. But first, we'll be right back with this episode's shareable stat. Really good chat with Jesse Agler, Director of Content for the San Diego Padres. Just fascinating hearing about their philosophy behind their content strategy and really speaking to the fans and giving the fans content they want. And that being the most effective form of ROI when it comes to digital and social media. But we'll get to know Jesse a little more coming up and have a little fun with him in our Jumping Around with Jesse segment. But before that, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat has a lot to do with our guest today. It's about the San Diego Padres. As you mentioned in the interview, they had an incredible offseason of big moves, acquiring some big-name players, and getting their fans really excited, and it has paid off. According to the New York Times, in a statistic that Jesse confirmed in our interview later on, the Padres actually, as of mid-February this past year, year-over-year, their season ticket sales have increased 600% since mid-February last year. An incredible 600% increase. And you know what? As much as he may deflect credit to others in the organization, the digital team behind Jesse and all the content they're producing to really drive home that buzz and that fan engagement is certainly playing a role. So what do you learn from take away from that 600% stat? It's really to learn about it and dip into your CRM. Understand where are those new leads coming from? Are they old season ticket holders who have come back because they're now reinvigorated by the Padres' recent acquisitions, that they're already in your CRM? Or have they come through social media channels? Have they come through direct mail, through targeted email marketing, through remarketing? When you have success and you have a lot of sales, the key is to figure out what's driving it, where is it coming from, what are the channels that are really working right now, what is the content that's really working right now to drive those leads and drive those conversions. So that's what you need to do is learn about it and iterate, repeat, and keep on getting better every day and learning how to drive sales with your fans. It definitely helps to make those big moves, but it also helps that when you get those moves and all that buzz starts happening, to know what to do with it and where to channel it. All right, that's the episode's shareable stat. Padres season ticket sales as of mid-February up 600% year-over-year. A great number that bodes really well for the organization and the franchise, and one that I'm sure our guest Jesse Agler is very excited about. And we'll get to have a little fun with Jesse coming right back at you in our Jumping Around with Jesse segment. All right, that was this episode's shareable stat, and our guest Jesse Agler, Director of Content for the San Diego Padres, has a lot to do with the shareable stat. And that was, Jesse, that as of mid-February, Padres season ticket sales year-over-year had increased 600%. Is that the kind of stuff that you guys are sharing internally all the time to get you guys excited, or did you not even know about that?
No, I heard about it at the same time everybody else heard about it in like an interview situation with Mike D. You know, I'm sure in the ticket universe of the Padres, they're talking about that stuff pretty regularly. And I would love to say, you know, hey, social media is the reason that the year-over-year sales are up 600%. But I think it was probably Matt Kemp and Justin Upton and James Shields and Will Myers and Derek Norris and Andrew Cashner and Tyson Ross, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, that's very cool to hear. And it's just another reason to be excited about this season. It's any sport, you know, the more people in the building, the more fun it is. So this is going to be a very fun year.
Hey, it's a team effort. So you guys get at least a little bit of credit.
All right, we'll take like 10 of those 600 or 10 tickets out of the 600%.
There you go. All right, Jesse, we had a great interview with you. Are you now ready to have a little fun in our Jump Around Jesse segment?
Let's jump.
All right, number one, you moved across the country for this job. You're now living in San Diego, going on a couple of years. For you, what is the best part about living in San Diego?
This is like the easiest question ever, right? I mean, you know, man, it's just the most unbelievable place. It's beautiful. It has everything. You have ocean, you have mountains, you have beaches, you have city, and kind of to top it all off from a selfish standpoint, you have, you know, one of the absolute jewels of Major League Baseball in Petco Park. So, you know, it's, there's nothing bad. It's just, it's almost unreal, the place. And I mean unreal, and that it's hard to believe that it's an actual real place that exists and you can live. So I feel very lucky.
You will get no argument from me. I definitely one of the best cities out there. All right, number two for you. Obviously, we talked about the big off season with all the buzz. Which of the Padres' digital and social channels generated the biggest buzz and really noticeable increase in interaction during that time with all the offseason moves?
Our Instagram numbers and growth were really, really good, and that goes back to something I mentioned earlier. You know, a credit to our design guys, to our team photographers, to our multimedia team, because we did, you know, put some videos up on Instagram. You know, that was neat to see. We obviously experienced, you know, really nice engagement and growth on all the main platforms, but you know, Instagram stood out a little bit.
Interesting. I think it's also because the ladies just love Matt Kemp.
Doesn't hurt. Does not hurt.
All right, so you've worked, Jesse, number three, you've worked for both now an NFL team and a Major League Baseball franchise. It's quite a resume builder. But so tell me, what's the biggest difference between NFL fans and Major League Baseball fans?
I don't know that there's a difference between the fans. I think fans are fans. And this is funny, right? Because I feel like I hear this a lot. Oh, he's a baseball guy. Oh, he's a football guy. Like, aren't most people fans of more than one sport? You know, obviously the way you consume your sports is going to be the same. You know, I mean, oh, I use Twitter. It's not like I only use Twitter for baseball, but for football, I don't. You know, I mean, so I don't think there's a big difference in, you know, the fans. Covering the two sports is different. You know, the relationships between the teams and the leagues are very different in the two sports. But I think, you know, from a fan standpoint, it pretty much is what it is.
Perfect segue into question number four. How does the content strategy differ? We talked a little bit about that in our interview, but how did your content strategy vary in the NFL with the Dolphins and now with Major League Baseball with that much longer season and all the games?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of like we said earlier, football is really intense a couple days a week. You know, baseball is more slow and steady wins the race. You know, it's you don't want your peaks and valleys aren't going to be as high and as low. You know, in football, a team starts 0-2 and it's like the sky is falling. You know, in baseball, if you start 0-2, it means nothing. You know, you prefer not to, but it's, you know, nobody's ready to jump off a bridge. So, you know, I think because of that and the nature of the seasons, you spread things out a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, content is content.
Is it harder to come up with different ways to sort of spin the stories and engage fans on a day-to-day basis in the baseball season? Or do stories just kind of come up organically and content is at least different enough from day to day?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a game every day. That's what's great about baseball, is at the absolute minimum, you have a game to discuss, whether it was last night's game or tonight's game. You know, you're never in a completely stale place, because that's one of the beautiful things about baseball is there's a game pretty much every day for the entire season.
And the best part is, after a loss, you don't have to wait that whole long week until you can make up for it.
Exactly.
All right, Jesse, how about a fun, quick one for you? Number five, your favorite Dolphins memory?
Not necessarily a specific one, but I think, you know, kind of taking this idea of the Finnsiders show out of absolute thin air and turning it into something was something, you know, I'm really proud of. And you know, it wasn't just me, of course, but... You know, I mean, when I started in July of 2010 with the Dolphins, Wayne and I were sitting at one desk. We were sharing a desk. He was on one side, I was on the other. And we were like, we're going to make a show, and we're going to launch it in a month. And we did. And, you know, it was just a radio show, and then it was a radio show with video on the internet. And then eventually it was on television by the time we left. And it's a thing now. Like, if you ask a random Dolphin fan, oh, do you know the Finnsiders? They'd be like, yeah, of course. And it was something that we made up. Like, we just created it. Very, very proud of that.
That's so cool. It's really like your baby, and it's still thriving. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
All right, how about number six for you, Jesse? The best Dolphins player while you were there on social media and the best Padres player on social media.
This is tough. Dolphins' Reggie Bush was really good. San Diego guy. So I'll tie that one in. He did a really good job with it. Padres, a lot of new guys. I'll give you one to watch. How about that? I won't say he's the best, but someone who I think is going to be really good is Will Myers. He's got a really good personality.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah, he's got a really good personality, and he seems to be pretty engaging on Twitter. So I'll throw his name out there right now as somebody to keep an eye on.
Definitely, I like that. There's a lot of guys out there who can share awesome content. There's not a lot that really have a good deal of interaction and engagement, and Will Myers definitely seems to be one of them that will reply back at you.
Yeah, he gets it. He's into it. He seems to enjoy it. And, you know, that's not always going to last, you know, with athletes because, you know, people can get exceptionally nasty. Oh, and it's probably easy at some point to just say, all right, I'm not going to, you know, get too deep into this. But he does a really nice job. Brian Hartline, another one, by the way, with the Dolphins, who did a really good job on Twitter. You know what I really like about Hartline on Twitter? And he's with the Browns now, I know. But he, if a writer, a local writer, a national writer, whoever, like if a football writer, you know, tweeted something or wrote something that he thought was nonsense, he would say that to them, which I loved. I thought that was always very entertaining.
Always awesome when someone is calling someone else out. All right, how about number seven for you, Jesse? There's always a new social network taking off. It seems like the biggest flavor of the month. So in 2015 MLB season, what social network do you think will take off with baseball or with sports and social media in general?
I'm supposed to say Snapchat, right? Like, this is the year that everybody gets on Snapchat. And you and I have had this conversation off the air. Maybe conservative is the wrong word, but I am more conservative when it comes to these things. I don't like to just jump on the thing of the moment. I'll look at it. I'll mess around with it. I'll try it. I'll engage it. Meerkat is the example right now. You know, everybody is Meerkat this, Meerkat that. And I think it's fascinating. Am I ready to like start doing Padres Meerkats? No. You know, we'll kind of wait and see, you know, and take that approach. I don't think we need to be the first one on something. I thought a couple of teams doing Tinder things was very funny and very creative. Obviously, there's not lasting power there, but I loved that. I thought that was a really, really good use of you know, kind of social whatever. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. You know, it could be something that doesn't even exist yet, right? Like, or that nobody knows about yet. That's the beauty of it. It's always happening. But yeah, I imagine everybody's going to jump on Snapchat this year that hasn't already, and that'll be a big deal.
Is it the type of thing where you go once it seems like Padres fans are going there, or is it more on the other end where we have a compelling use case for it now?
Yeah, no, I think it has to be both. I don't see, and that's a really good question, because I think a lot of times it's easy to be like, oh, the kids love the Snapchat, we got to do the Snapchat, as opposed to like, all right, let's actually think about how we would use this. You know, would it be good? The last thing I want to do is jump on a platform and give you crap. That's not worth it. Like, I would rather not be on the platform, and I'd rather someone be like, I can't believe they're not on this, as opposed to being on it and not doing it well. So I look at the staffing, I look at, you know, the amount of time we have to try and thrive on something new. You know, I look at how popular I think it could be, and, you know, you kind of make that decision right there. You know, active Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram accounts take a lot of time to manage. And, you know, so if we're going to add another one, I feel like we got to really be committed to it, and you don't want to half-ass anything.
Definitely. Does Major League Baseball, do they support teams at all, or try to educate them or even nudge them to get on certain networks?
Yeah, they can be helpful with that kind of thing. You know, they'll supply you with whatever background you want to know. You know, and they can help you get account names and that kind of thing.
Okay.
I think where MLB probably does a good job is if you don't know anything about something, they can give you some basic information on it.
Excellent. All right, number eight for you, Jesse, moving right along here, almost finished here. Your biggest social media pet peeve, and maybe it's creating crappy content just to be somewhere, your biggest social media
pet peeve
in the social media and sports world.
Yeah, that's one of them. You know, just to do it for the sake of doing it, which is what we just talked about. another one that I really, really get annoyed by is when there's this one-size-fits-all approach, you know, that somebody will have. And I mean that in a couple different ways. One would be, oh, this works on Twitter, so I'm going to do the same thing on Facebook and the same thing on Instagram. Now, there is content that works across those platforms. But to say everything we do, we're going to put on all three, that kind of annoys me. You know, and similarly, you know, for an organization to think, you know, okay, this worked for us, so it'll work for you. Like, that's not the case. And the strategy is the strategy, and some of what worked at the Dolphins worked for the Padres. But plenty of stuff we did in Miami wouldn't work in San Diego. Plenty of stuff we do in San Diego wouldn't have worked in Miami. And it's because they're different places. It's because it's a different sport. It's different fan bases. You know, and so I, you know, when I see, and maybe it's a league thing more than it is a team thing, but when I see this sort of one size fits all approach, I would definitely call that a pet peeve.
I totally agree there. It's amazing how so many professional brands, organizations don't get that, and or at least don't practice it. All right, number nine for you, Jesse. This will be a fun one. And this can be from the NFL or Major League Baseball or anywhere. The best ballpark food you've ever had?
Easy. Seaside Market at Petco Park, the tri-tip nachos. Off the charts. Off
the charts. I'm sure our listeners are drooling just hearing tri-tip nachos.
I mean, it's – so here's the thing. I had heard about them all year last year. And so I think the last home game, I was like, I got to try these. Like, I just hadn't been down there, you know, because I'm pretty busy during the games. And I don't get, like, a major opportunity to go around and eat. So I made a beeline in the last home game of the year last year. And I guess it was worth the wait, but I also hated myself for not having had them, like, 20 times during the season. Although I probably, you know, saved my waistline a little bit by not doing so. But they are so good. And that whole area is really neat at Petco. It's a local place, Seaside Market. It's like a real market in the area, and it's neat because they've sort of built it out like a market, you know, in the ballpark. So you can go, and they've got, you know, salads here and sandwiches here and the nachos there and the this that. So it's neat, and then you kind of pay as you're leaving. It's a really neat area, and the tri-tip nachos are unlike anything I've ever had.
I will say Petco Park does a phenomenal job of really integrating a lot of the local favorites into the ballpark. Like you said earlier, even with Hodads, we talked about Phil's Barbecue, Seaside Market. Just it's really, really well done. And now you can count down to opening day and also to the next chance you have to get tri-tip nachos.
Yeah, it'll probably be April this year. It's not going to wait till September.
All right, last one for you, Jesse. A quick prediction. We're assuming they're going to get to the National League Championship Series to play for the pennant.
Oh, we are. Good.
Who will be their opponent if they win the National League in the World Series? Who's going to win the American League this year?
Oh man, I don't like doing predictions. On paper, everybody says the Nationals and the Dodgers are the
we're gonna concede the Padres. So all you gotta do is AL.
Oh, okay. Well, what I was about to say was I can guarantee you that the NLCS will not be the Dodgers and the Nationals. Like, it just never works out that way, right? Everybody says, "Oh, these are the two best teams," and you know that's it. All right, so we're conceding the Padres win the pennant. I love that. In the American, yeah, of course. In the American League, you know what? I like Seattle a lot. And the cool thing is, you know, I'm here in Arizona for spring training, and these two teams share the complex here in Peoria, the Padres and the Mariners. So I'm going to be a total homer, and I'm going to say we're going to have a Vetter Cup World Series, all Peoria World Series. Let's go Padres Mariners, and Padres obviously sweep the series.
Oh, of course. I'm sure your Mariners neighbors there at the Peoria Complex, if they hear about that you picked them, they'll be extra nice to you in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, no, they're a cool team. You know, we've seen them a couple times already, and you kind of look up and down their lineup and at their pitching rotation, and you're like, ooh, like, I mean, it's a really tough division, obviously, the American League West, but they're a very cool team. Very cool team.
Hey, I'll take a game one, James Shields and Felix Hernandez.
Line it up, man. Let's do it.
All right, Jesse, you're finished up with your Jumping Around with Jesse segment. Your chance now for your social media all-star follow, someone you recommend that we follow on Twitter, who they are and why they're worth following.
You know, Neil, you do a really nice job on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Oh, you don't know it? I'm at NJH287.
Yeah, exactly. How am I supposed to have that memorized? No, but I follow you on Twitter, and you put up a lot of good articles. So I'd say that people are interested in all this kind of stuff. Make sure you're following Neil. You know, you put a lot of worthwhile stuff up there, and I will also shamelessly plug the Padres Twitter account at Padres. You kind of get a look at some of the things we're doing.
That's fantastic. You know, I like both those recommendations. You're the first guest to call me out, which is fantastic. And the Padres, people can see if you're practicing what you're preaching, and you definitely do. All right, lastly, how about yourself? Where can we find you? And you already told us where to find the Padres. How about yourself, Jesse?
Jesse Agler, just at Jesse Agler. It's my name. I am on there. You can find me. And yeah, so appreciate the time. And this was a lot of fun, man.
Oh, it's great. Great getting to know a little bit more about the Padres, and you do a great job there. I can speak not just as a fan, but as an observer in social media and sports pro. And thank you so much for sharing some of your expertise and knowledge today on the podcast.
My pleasure, man. Anytime.
And best of luck this season, where I'll be watching, that's for sure.
You will be watching because, as you said, they're going to win the pennant, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
I love it. Thanks, Jesse. Thank you so much again to Jesse Agler, Director of Content for the San Diego Padres. Really great discussion with him, really great guy, and looking forward to keeping up with the Padres this season and seeing all the great content they continue to produce as they put all that buzz and that exciting new team on the field this season. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. We'll see you again next time. Until then, enjoy the springtime. Hope you had a good March Madness season. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Follow me on Twitter at NJH287. And check out more information about the podcast at dsmsports.net. Thanks again for downloading and or listening to the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.